Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Tuesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. I guess this is the Super Tuesday 2 is what they're calling it today, with the big prizes of Florida and Ohio on the line today, as well as North Carolina, Illinois, and Missouri. And Jim, I've made some disparaging comments about the Ohio State Buckeyes in the past, and I'll do it again right now. Their mascot, of course, is the Buckeye, which is a flowering nut, one of the most intimidating mascots out there. But the guy in the fuzzy head that they bring to the games, his name is Brutus. So on this Ides of March, will the Brutus voters in Ohio give the shiv to their own governor or to the front runner in this race? That seems to be the biggest mystery left out there for today, wouldn't you say?
First of all, Greg, I have to correct you. A Buckeye can really, really do some damage if it falls on your head. Secondly, I understand that if you don't call it the Ohio State University, then Brutus the Buckeye will jump out from behind a tree and grab you. So it's kind of like it's this legend that goes around the campus over there of the Ohio State University. Yeah, look, we will see. Polling shows it pretty close. Anti-Trump folks are hoping for a Kasich win, and Kasich has done so much to create warm, fuzzy feelings amongst those Trump skeptics. Also, the outlook not looking good in Rubio. I'll be baffled. To me, it seems really strange that a guy who's got like a 57% approval rating in his home state is getting 20-some percent of the vote. But, you know, we will see whether the polls are accurate. If so, it probably looks like the end of the Rubio campaign, so we could be looking at a three-man race fairly shortly, or maybe even just a two-man race.
Well, that's the end of the depressing news. We're going all good today, and it's even all political, so we're doing our best to keep your spirits up here today, and tomorrow may be another story, but that'll wait till tomorrow. First good martini, in a way, is the fact that Hillary Clinton is either so indifferent to what happened in Benghazi, or she just can't remember that it happened. She was at another town hall for the Democrats on MSNBC talking to Chris Matthews. He asked her about regime change in Libya, and she went on to say, well, we didn't want to see what is happening in Syria happen in Libya, and this is how she explained it.
You see what's happened in Syria with the consequences of millions of people flooding out of Syria, with more than 250,000 people killed, with terrorist groups like ISIS taking up almost a huge swath of territory, as big as some of the states in that area. So, yes, I mean, Libya was a different kind of calculation, yeah. And we didn't lose a single person.
We didn't lose a single person. We lost an ambassador, for heaven's sake, plus another assistant there, as well as two security details, former Navy SEALs at the compound. So, Jim, what do you make of this?
Greg, let me be clear. We did not lose a single person. We lost four people. A comment like that, you wonder if she's even paying attention to what she's talking about, whether she's just on autopilot. Whether she asserts that, you know, like there are two really egregious statements here. The first is to say we didn't lose a single person after the, you know, and they just seem to forget about the Benghazi attack. That's kind of baffling. And then two, to point to Libya, which is now largely controlled by ISIS, as some sort of American foreign policy success story. There's an argument made on the Republican side of the aisle that we're now in post-truth politics, that whatever the circumstances are, if you just assert it strongly enough, if you like your plan, you can keep your plan. You know, if you like your doctor, you can keep your doctor. Your premiums are going to go down $2,500. If you just assert it often enough, people will believe it. And that kind of is this feeling of what she's getting with this one. It also is that one of the arguments of why Hillary is not a good politician, and that she may be a practiced and shameless liar, but she's not a particularly good liar. You can finesse the argument. You can say, look, we did, you know, these were the decisions we made based on the intelligence we had at the time. We had to prevent a massacre. You can make those arguments. But instead, she kind of insists that, you know, Libya is a success story. And it's just kind of baffling to see Hillary think this can work. I think we saw the birth of a general election attack ad last night, Greg.
If you're Hillary Clinton, you cannot run around saying we didn't lose a single person in Libya.
On to the second good martini now. And this takes a little bit of work to finesse here. But Dr. Ben Carson, who, of course, is now firmly in the Donald Trump camp, gave another sterling endorsement of his new friend on the Steve Malzberg show for Newsmax, pointing out that he's been promised some role in the administration. Still liquid, he says, as to what that might be. He also admitted that he probably would have preferred to endorse someone else, but given the facts on the ground, looks like Trump's going to win, so he figured he might as well get on that train. And then when it came to, well, what if Trump's a terrible president, he offered this.
Hey, the way I look at it, even if Donald Trump turns out not to be such a great president, which I don't think is the case. I think he's going to surround himself with really good people. But even if he didn't, we're only looking at 4 years, as opposed to multiple generations and perhaps the loss of the American dream forever.
Well, there's no downplaying what would happen with a Hillary Clinton presidency. But, Jim, a lot can go wrong in 4 years. We learned that with Jimmy Carter. We've learned that with other presidents over the years. Just assume that, well, we'll get through those 4 years and then we'll fix everything. Not exactly the most sterling endorsement.
Jimmy Carter was only 4 years, too. The first term of Barack Obama was only 4 years. And the second term was only 4 years. Now, together, they're 8 years. The only thing I can think of is that in some level, Ben Carson knows that Trump is disrespecting him. And this is part of some, like, long, devious plan from the seemingly kind and gentle good doctor. Oh, I'll endorse you, Donald. And then I'll go out and I'll give you the worst compliments I could possibly think of. And I will undermine you from the inside. And if he does do this, then you know what? Having given a lot of criticism, my hat would be off to you, Ben Carson. There would be a genius little strategy there. It's very strange because he also made this comment that, yes, we talked about a job in his administration, which, by the way, I'm hearing some people say that's illegal. No, it's not. It's perfectly legal to talk to people about serving your administration. You just can't promise someone a job in exchange for some sort of donation or something like that. The other thing is that then he said, you know, well, have you talked about other candidates? And he says, yeah, and it just didn't work out. Which certainly makes it sound like, well, I wanted a job with somebody and Trump was hiring. So that's kind of the really uncharitable interpretation of Carson's remarks. Before we move on, Greg, I should also point out his comment that Carson said he was reticent about endorsing Trump, but then he met him and he said he's really not the kind of person you see on stage. There are two Donald Trumps. He's a completely different person when he's not up on stage. So as long as he believed that everything Trump is saying on stage is a lie, he was comfortable endorsing him.
Two quick points here. I think Trump supporters, if they're still listening, would say that, well, you just pointed out why Trump's the best choice. He's hiring. He can create a job for Ben Carson that apparently Ted Cruz and Marco Rubio and John Kasich cannot. At least,
you know,
at least
Greg, if the world's greatest neurosurgeon needs trouble, it's trouble finding a job, then actually the Obama economy is in much worse shape than even I thought. So
yes, and as entertaining as the actual Republican candidate debates have been, I want to see an endorsement debate between Ben Carson for Donald Trump and Rick Santorum for Marco Rubio and see who can just completely destroy their preferred candidate faster.
That would be a strangely fascinating debate. I would love to see. You know. I mean, my guy's done nothing, but he's really good, and I really like the guy. Well, let me tell you, my guy, if he's terrible, he's going to be terrible for only 4 years.
All right, on to the crazy martini now. And, well, actually, it's crazy and good. Donald Trump was in Ohio. He spent time in Florida and Ohio, but Ohio, of course, is where the race is tightest. And, of course, he's apparently had Chris Christie going around with him for the most part. Chris Christie interviewed Trump on stage in North Carolina yesterday, and he was with Trump again in Ohio last night. And Trump, realizing what's going on in the polls, decided he needed to take a few shots at John Kasich, and he used his new friend from New Jersey as a willing pawn in this analogy.
Your governor is absentee. He goes, listen to this, because I know, because I was there, but I go back and I still work. You know, I have a job, right? You got to do your job. So your governor, Kasich, if you look at him, and I'm being totally impartial, he goes to New Hampshire. He's living in New Hampshire, living. Where's Chris? Is Chris around? Even more than Chris Christie, he was there.
Where's Chris?
Right? Even more. I hated to do that, but I had to make my point.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure he hated that. He's not just going to use you for whatever he needs you for, Governor Christie. I can assure you of that. Jim, you're just enjoying the self-esteem crushing of Chris Christie in the last few weeks, aren't you?
He's an even bigger absentee governor than Shinebox over here. All right, Shinebox, get over here. Work on my shoes, will you? Okay, boss. Whatever you say, boss. Just reminding me of Ned Beatty in Superman. How Christie didn't see that Trump was not going to treat him well is just kind of baffling. That look in his eyes. Because he had it again. He did it at another event, and he similarly had that far away, depressed, sad, dear God, what have I done with my life? I've made a terrible decision. Look in his eyes. If you want to take a slightly less jovial tone to the continuing humiliation of Chris Christie, Christie was at Trump events yesterday. Do you know where the lieutenant governor and acting governor of New Jersey was yesterday, Greg?
I believe at a funeral for a slain police officer.
You got it. But hey, you know, let's all get together and mock Rubio and Kasich for being absentee governors, right? So, you know, Chris Christie, you've got this coming to you. You're a bad, bad man, Chris Christie.
On that note, take a deep breath. We'll see what the results are tonight. And, Jim, you're out tomorrow, but we'll talk to you on Thursday.
See you Thursday, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. And tune in again on Wednesday. There certainly will be a new podcast for the 3 Martini Lunch.